This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast with Martin, Ronnie, Travis.
What's up?
Yo, yo, yo.
I think I caught you guys off guard. Were you guys expecting something else? Are you just not used to hearing my voice on this podcast? It's been so long.
Yeah, that's about right.
Let me tell you, man, it's hard traveling through time. You should know this by now. We've been doing this for 45 episodes.
Yeah.
If you could travel through time, you should be there for every episode, right?
I mean, that's not how time travel works, Travis.
Ronnie.
You're obviously not aware. Ronnie, you do a timey-wimey podcast hour. Explain time travel to Travis, please.
You can't change fixed points in time.
That's so Easter recording is a fixed point in time?
Yeah.
Hey, Ronnie gets, all right. Ronnie gets a special treat. Oh, no. There it is.
I won the game. Yay.
We need more time travel books from Aftershock. Joe, get on that. I guess Revisionist was the only one, right?
Revisionist 2.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love that. We were getting some sequels, right? When's Rough Riders come out? Next week or the week after? It's this month.
Next week,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's next week, I believe.
Rough Riders Ride or Die. That's going to be awesome.
That's right. Special guest appearance by DMX.
DMX and Jet Li. What movie was that?
Exit Wounds.
That's it. That is it. But yeah, that's coming out. And then I guess Dark Arc is coming back in May?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Pretty sweet, man. Pretty sweet. All right, let's quit with the chitter chatter. Do we have news?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I've been.
Oh, we have. Did we talk about the new Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nader book last time that got announced?
Not Relay?
Not Relay. The other one.
Which one?
Oh, now you're going to have to. The one that's like, she's the mother and. Damn it.
Oh, yes. We didn't talk about that. Yeah, where she goes to hell.
Yeah, so it's like Dante's Inferno.
Oh, God, what's the name of that
book? And she's the mother.
We're the worst Aftershock podcast ever. We don't know anything about what we're talking about. We just diddle daddle.
We just go on the fly.
Yeah, we just go on the fly. We don't take notes. Her Infernal Descent.
Yes.
Yeah, Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson.
Co-writing. And Kyle Charles.
Yep.
Doing art.
Which Lonnie and Zach did, they wrote Dregs together, didn't they?
Yeah, and they're writing Relay together.
Yeah, they're doing Relay together. I think they have another book. Oh, Cable. Aren't they doing Cable together?
They're doing Cable together. Aren't they doing the Black Mask book, too?
Oh, man, you're so right. Dude, all right, here's the thing. I don't know what the deal is, because Zach gets all the credit. Everywhere I go, I'm always this Zach Thompson guy. Listen, he co-writes all his books with Lonnie. Lonnie should get all the credit. Zach, no more credit for you.
They're like the dynamic duo, though.
They are. It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, well, maybe we should have Lonnie on the show, right?
Yeah. What's up with that?
Well, if you guys listen to the interview with Zach, I said once Relay got started and everything that we'd have them both back on.
Listen, I don't listen to podcasts.
Yeah. You're not on podcasts either.
I'm just looking at this now. Cold War comes out next week as well. The new Christopher Sabella and Hayden Sherman book.
Yeah, nice, that one looks pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Like, Total Recall Travelers-ish style. Yeah.
That's how they should have put the solicit in there. Well, I don't know how popular Travelers is. Obviously, within our circle, it is, because we all are talking about it.
But, it was popular up north, right?
Oh, yeah, in Canada. Yeah, it's a Canadian show. Travis, have you seen Travelers?
No, but I recall hearing about it on maybe Nerdy Legion.
Yeah, it's a great podcast. Bio. You should go listen to that. Nerdylegion.com/podcast/Nerdylegion. Shameless plug. Oh man, so many good books. All right, cool. Let's get into actual books since we don't have any news. I was trying to see what the final order cutoff was for Shock, the anthology book, but I couldn't find it. And I would assume it's got to be coming up pretty quick, right?
I thought it was last week.
Oh, it was last week? Dang it.
I think so.
Maybe I should break my time travel and travel back to the last episode.
Yeah.
It's cool. That comes out March 20th, and I can't wait to get that.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. God. Right, we need to figure out how we're going to discuss that book. There's no way we can...
Story by story, dude.
Yeah.
I would say one big episode of just that. And I don't know how many stories are actually in it, but one of us either take one or two stories to talk about.
I like it.
That's my idea.
It'll be like being back in elementary school.
That's right.
Show and tell. I like it. Let's get on with this week's books. And I think Ronnie is going to do the creator roll call for Monster Mechanica number 3. Isn't that right, Ronnie?
No, that's not right. You're back, so the butcher of names is taking the episode off.
All right, we're going to talk about Monster Mechanica number 3. This is written and lettered by Paul Aller. We've got art by Chris Evenhus and colors by Sean Weirs. Bet you didn't think that's how it was pronounced, did you?
Didn't know.
Yeah.
But it sounds good to me.
Now you know. Sean Weirs.
And knowing's half the battle.
Well, Chris and Sean are both Dutch. They're Dutch names, so that's why they don't quite sound like they're written. Anyways, who's going to nutshell Monster Mechanica number 3 for me?
Intern.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude. This is the one I don't have a nutshell prepared for. You want my shoddy nutshell?
Yeah, do it. I believe in you.
All right. Oh, yeah, like, this is not the book to believe in me on. Okay, so, Leonardo and the bros win the siege. Isabel in the tower with Riario. They're talking, and he throws a mercenary out the window, inciting a riot that envelops the city. Basically, all the mercenaries start murdering the citizens, and maybe worse. Meanwhile, the Monstro is abducting anybody that looks like Isabel and taking them to safety. Isabel tells the Monstro to basically fight anybody with a sword. And then I believe she's reunited with Leonardo, and he's kind of like, oh, so you just left the Monstro to go and basically reenact his entire history of violence on the city of Volterra. Okay, that's cool. And I think that's most of it, right?
See, and look, he didn't even prepare a nutshell. This is the professionalism that we expect from our interns.
That's right. That's why you got hired.
That's why you're hired. Well, he's not hired yet. He's just an intern. We have to change that on the website. Intern at large. No, I'd say that's pretty good, dude. I would say that's pretty good. I was a little taken aback by the way that the issue starts. It felt a little disjointed from what I remember at the end of the second issue. But not like completely disjointed, right? Because like you're picking up a story after the siege. It just felt like there was a chunk of time that wasn't explained between issue 2 and 3. Although maybe it's just the way that I read it. Because I think it almost felt to me like there were some time jumps back and forth between a few of the different characters just to kind of see like what they're up to. But overall, I mean, I like the issue. I think the Monstro really got interesting for me in this issue. I don't want to go back into my spiel from when we talked about issue 2. Where I think you were out that episode, Ronnie, but Travis and I talked about like AI and things like that for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get back into that, but I mean, we learned some interesting stuff, right? Because when Da Vinci meets back up with everyone, what's the girl's name again?
Isabel.
When he meets back up with Isabel, she starts telling him how different the Monstro is and the things that he's doing. And he's like, well, like you're resetting the machine after every mission, right? Like if you don't reset the machine, then he's going to learn from the stuff that he knows. And like all he knows is violence. And I mean, we know that she's not resetting him, right? That's why he's becoming such a person, quote unquote person. Yeah. He's grown a personality. And I thought that was really interesting the way that that was brought up. Although I don't think Da Vinci fully understands it because he's obviously not just pure violence.
Right, because he's saving all the women in the village that look like Isabel,
right. Which, I mean, that's kind of interesting, I guess. I mean, that goes into a whole nother lecture. This is like the nature versus nurture thing, right? because the monster is kind of like a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a robot killing machine, but his personality is like a kid. And obviously he wants to protect what he sees as kind of his mother figure. And as a result, he's protecting any woman that looks like Isabel. But I mean, really, it's because he doesn't know any better, right? Because I think as soon as Isabel tells him, hey, like, you can't just protect these women that look like me. This is not about protecting me. It's about protecting everybody. That's when he's like, yeah. And he goes off and starts, like, killing all the mercenaries that are in town. Because he knows that those people are hurting just the villagers.
Right.
Because I think it might be, like, a little bit of a leap to think that he's embracing a protectorate role for the villagers. Like, he might still be working for Isabel because she told him to do it, you know?
Yeah, she just wasn't specific, basically, on her order, right?
Sure, sure.
Was pretty much attack anybody with a sword.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I guess I guess I just want the Monstro to be a whole lot more than what Da Vinci thinks.
Yeah, which it is, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
I think it's challenging in that he's not vocal, so...
Sure.
You can only speculate on what's going on inside, and obviously, like, you know, like, there's an appeal there. That's what you're doing. It's tough to say, you know, from the outside, like what's going on there, you know? And especially, I thought it was interesting, you know, like, we don't really know the Monstro's history before the first issue. Like,
right, yeah.
Like it almost seemed like the thing with Isabel is like a test run where he ends up like throwing a bunch of dudes around. That's interesting that they didn't establish all the like quote unquote missions that the Monstro has done before this, you know, like what has the Monstro been doing? You know, like what was Isabel telling him to do? It's very interesting where they chose to pick it up and like what they're revealing about what's the general situation, what's been happening.
Right. Yeah. Anything else you want to say about this book?
Nope.
I would just say like I think there's a lot left speculation about the extent of Leonardo's plan, you know? Like that, I feel like there's certain things that have been sown to suggest that he knows everything that's unfolding way before it's happening. You know, like he's got as Futurama would say, like whatever ridiculously circuitous plan that's got end at a place and explains why he's pitting like the Medicis against the Pope and like murdering a whole city. I'm hoping that there's some of that versus just kind of like he knows somewhat of what's going on. Like he's got his plan, but he's getting blindsided by something, perhaps the Monstro. We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of suspected that there was more to his plan, right, than what we're seeing. I want to know, but to me, this story is about Isabel and the Monstro, so. Da Vinci stuff, I'm like, all right, like that's fine, but I'm not as interested in that unless whatever the reveal is leads to another series, because then I think that'd be interesting. I think,
oh yeah, like further adventures of the Monstro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, like Da Vinci, just he kind of seems flat compared to Isabel and the Monstro, so I don't find him as interesting as the other two characters. But we'll see. He almost like he comes off like he could be just a mustache twirling villain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that would be disappointing, dude.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like we'll if see. He just I don't know. Like he has to have an end game. He's like getting all up in this stuff, you know. And like I'm left with kind of a question from the last issue to this issue of like why he sent Isabel on a mission to free this guy who ends up inciting a huge riot. Like murderous riot, like of humanitarian proportions in this city, you know, like that's part of a plan or yeah. Is he really just like a dumbass who like is good at science and painting, but like, I don't know. I can't imagine because I'm still looking at fucking what's his name? Machiavelli, dude. Like, Machiavelli is like gonna write a book about this someday, about what Leonardo did here, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. That is true. All right, let's rate this one up. I'm just gonna give it I mean, I like the book. I dig it. 3.5 out of 5 is what I'm gonna give it.
That's about in my wheelhouse too. I'm gonna go 3.75 because I'm digging the story and I'm digging the art, so it's always a solid read.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go maybe 4 out of 5. Like, I really like the series, but I feel like this one kind of hooked me less than the first two issues. Like, there was a little bit less that I took away from it, but I still like it.
Nice. Now, the moment that everyone's been waiting for. Let's review Animosity, the coloring book.
Yay.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right, well, so I mean, it's going to be brief, so.
Yeah, real brief. Because, I mean, it's a coloring book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so Travis. Travis, you didn't see the book, right? You didn't look at it?
I flipped through it. It seemed to be a bunch of covers in black and white, for the most part.
Pretty much. All right, Ronnie, you wanted to say some things about the coloring book that you noticed.
Yeah, well, for one, I think it's awesome that Aftershock is doing a coloring book, because there's only... I mean, besides, like, Marvel or DC that has coloring books all over the place for different things, like, there isn't that many companies out there that's doing outside-the-box type stuff. Like, sure. Valiant had a coloring book, and but Marvel and DC don't actually have a coloring book, like, about a comic, per se.
Right.
You know, they could have, like, Teen Titans Go coloring books or, you know, whatever, but I knew that it was going to be Animosity when I heard that the coloring book was going to come out, because arguably that's one of the most popular books, best-selling books that they have.
Mm-hmm.
But also on the flip side of the coin is coloring books are for kids, and Animosity, the book, really isn't a kid book.
Listen, I take offense to that. They do make adult coloring books, and they're apparently extremely popular.
Yeah, well, yeah. I was just saying, like, most times.
Yeah, sure. No, I get what you're saying. I'm just trying to give you crap.
Because
yeah,
there's only like 2 or 3 pages in here that aren't very kid-friendly, and one's like the exterminator where he's laying on the kitchen floor and the mice are eating his stomach from the first issue.
Right.
But the rest of them are like what Travis alluded to. They're the great covers that we got, like the Charlotte's Web cover and... the Jaws like cover with the alligator. Well, I guess it's more like Lake Placid. But yeah, I thought it was a cool idea, and I applaud them for going outside the box to do something like this.
Yep.
So do you think that it's more for adults? Like, because as Martin said, you know, like, there is a market there, kind of. The cross section of adult coloring book enthusiasts and Aftershock hardcore fans might be kind of a small Venn diagram, but maybe it it appeals to coloring book demo and they get Aftershock fans in.
I mean, maybe. I don't know what the actual demographics are for Animosity. But I mean, I would assume a lot of it is males just because comics are mostly male. I don't know what the actual audience is for a comic book coloring book period. But I would assume that they sell well enough to continue being issued, because, I mean, they're not done all the time. But you see a couple every year. And usually it's on really popular stuff, right? I think, like, Harley Quinn has one every year, for example. Harley Quinn or Suicide Squad. I think last year they had one because of the... So, I mean, they've got to sell. And surely there's... The cost would be minimal, right? Because you don't have lettering, you're just
don't have inking.
There's no
colors.
Yeah, there's no inking or colors. You're just reprinting covers. So I mean, the cost on these things has to be nothing. Unfortunately, from what I've seen, a lot of the coloring books are higher than regular price, which I don't understand. But I guess part of that is because it's more of a niche thing, and so. I guess it's worth for them to make it cost more to recover that cost, because they're going to sell less books. But I think the cool thing about the coloring books is that it I don't know that the audience necessarily is people that read that book, right? In this case, Animosity. I think the coloring book gives publishers a way in elsewhere.
Yeah, like a PR, like a built-in PR type thing.
Well, like you can put these at like Barnes & Noble, right? Because mm-hmm. people go there to buy coloring books anyway. Or put them on like the Scholastic thing that they have at schools.
Yeah, the book fair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that, you know, a lot of people don't think about, because the market for these things and other types of books like this isn't necessarily the average comic fan.
Right. I wonder if it's European size, like oversized.
I don't know. I got my my local comic shop to get me one. I haven't picked it up yet. I probably won't be able to till next. But when I do, I'll let you know.
Okay. Good. I'm curious.
Yeah. I got it for Zoe. Zoe loves coloring stuff. So, all right,
hell yeah, dude. That's what I was saying is like I want a coloring review. So when Zoe gets a chance, like I want to know how it did as a coloring book.
Fair enough.
Did it stand out? We want to see when she colors the exterminator page or the happy alligator subway page where his belly's full.
I'm curious, dude. She I mean, the reason I brought up Suicide Squad and Harley Quinn is because she got those for Christmas last year. She specifically requested them on her list for Santa. She colored the shit out of those. All right, let's go back to some books. Let's talk about last week's books since we didn't get to record last week. And I'll leave it up to you, Ronnie. Would you like to discuss Animosity or Dark Arc first?
Let's go with Animosity since we just got done talking about the coloring book.
Ah, you're so smart. Animosity.
I'm a professional.
You're professional something. Animosity number 12, written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Raphael De La Torre, colors by Rab, the Swaggy P. Schwager, and letters by Marshall. Who's going to recap this issue for
me? I got to recap if you want it.
Go for it, intern.
All right, intern, attack. All right, Jesse and Kyle are on the run with the liberated bees on their way back to the hive. Kyle is injured when their tractor is run off the road, and he stays behind to hold off the farmers while Jesse and the queen takes the queen back to the hive. Jesse wakes to discover that the bees are preparing for war against the farmers, but it looks like someone has arrived to exterminate the bees.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Which would be the farmers, right?
That's what I thought.
It's the farmers?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessarily clear. Yeah. Because they're in like assault gear.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that'd be my assumption, right?
Yeah, that's what I assumed. Because, I mean, they knew that they were going to get the bees or up against the bees. So that obviously they'd be protected.
You know what this could be? This could be like the Negan thing on Walking Dead, right? Where they meet this one group and they, you know, get rid of that group easily. And then it turns out that that group worked for somebody else who's bigger and badder and they come in.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's what the farmers are. Maybe the farmers weren't necessarily bad, but they were working for the SWAT team. I don't know what to call
them. No, the city, right? It's like the city.
Yeah.
The city is like all effed up, and it's like so they're going to be the really scary ones, you know.
Yeah.
If this isn't the city, then like when they get to the city, that's probably going to be really bad.
Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Oh, speaking of the SWAT team, how'd you like that? A dude shot a bee with a single shot without a scope.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty badass.
That's a good shot.
So maybe they aren't farmers with that shot.
Yeah, that's true. There's no way. Because, I mean, they've got heavy equipment, dude.
Yeah.
They've got this, like, jacked-up truck in the back.
Yep.
My favorite, by the way, is the boar. It's got a propane tank on top of his back.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what they use as a flamethrower, maybe? Because the dude is next to him?
I would say so.
That was my favorite thing. It was my favorite thing.
And Mole Man as the leader?
Yeah, Mole Man as the leader. These guys can't be the farmers, man, because we didn't get like the type of attitude that these guys are giving Jesse, right? But they obviously know who Jesse is. I mean, the guy called her by name.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you think about it, Sandor and them just blew up their gasoline building. So the farmers are totally pissed off and foobarred now. So if any time to give them an attitude, it'd be now.
Yeah, I guess. I guess.
I don't know. I'm on the fence. I don't know if they are the farmers or if they're the elevated bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but so they're here to exterminate the bees, yeah? Setting aside kind of a tangent, which I think is interesting, which is that the bees are now using weapons. I'm all for, right? Because, like, a bee stings you and it dies. Right. But if a bee stings you, especially if you dip your pin or whatever in bee venom, like, that could really fuck people up.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless you're like me and allergic to bees.
See? Dip it in bee venom and, like, you could decimate an army, like, right away with no casualties.
Well, isn't that what they do here? There's that one panel where they're, like, flying around. One's got, like, a push pin. There's a couple with needles. There's, like, three bees carrying a hypodermic needle. But there's two in the corner that have a little vial in a Q-tip. And I assume that's what they were doing. They were, like, they had bee venom in that little vial, and they were just putting it on all these
pushpins.
No, on, like, the pushpins.
Oh, yeah. On the syringe and stuff? Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Nice, dude. Yeah. All right. I'm on board. Okay, so about the enemy, though, like, they're going to exterminate the bees. Doesn't that kill the farm? You know, like, can that be the farmers?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't make sense. And I mean,
so maybe that points to the city.
Well, and I think the way that this whole thing with the bees was explained in this issue, it almost didn't make sense that the farmers would want to have the queen either. And I can't remember why I thought that when I read it. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. Wouldn't it just make more sense for them to, like, make a deal with the bees?
Yeah, because it seemed like since the wake, the worker bees just don't follow the queen anymore. They're more like free thinking.
Right.
Which is the reason why they came up to go to war without her even being there. It was more like a democracy.
Well, it's because they have the hive mind, right? So they don't necessarily need to have the queen. The queen's just there to make more bees. That's why they want to protect her and rescue her. But, like, they don't have they don't have individual minds. It's one collective mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably a S-load of royal jelly stored somewhere in that damn-sized beehive. they could make, like, 1,000 queens.
Yeah. I'm surprised that wasn't brought up, but I guess it would kind of defeat the point of the story. But, I mean, it's my understanding that there's always multiple, like, bees in a hive that can become queen at any time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but the bees are sentient, and they really like this. This is the good queen.
I guess that's what it is.
This is the best queen bee. From this hive that obviously probably has multiple queens.
Man. Yeah.
Okay, how about this, all right? Like, I know we're probably running along on this one, but do you guys think the Kyle is alive? Or you think, like, we're not going to see him again?
No, I'd say he's alive.
Yeah, I would, he's too much of an important character to get killed, quote-unquote, off-camera.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I wanted to talk briefly about, what's the cat's name? Is it...
Mittens?
Mittens, that's it. So, when Mittens comes upon Sandor...
Yeah.
And pretty much calls him a piece of shit.
Yeah, right. which I called back in a couple of episodes before. You can go check them out in the archive.
Unless there's a timestamp, it never happened. So when she meets up with Sandor, she's like, "Hey, does Jesse know that you killed her mom? Where's her dad? Did you kill him so you could bang your mom? That was a little weird."
Yeah, it's. You know, at first when I read that series of panels, it kind of came off like because you know cats are kind of like jealous or what's the word I'm looking for? Like
catty.
They're totes jelly.
Yeah, like I only want loved when I want it, not when you know you want it.
Sure.
Type thing.
Yep.
Or petted or whatever. So I read it kind of like throwing Sandor under the bus, kind of. But then after rereading it, I was like, wow, maybe there is some dirt here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
we haven't seen their death, right? The Jesse's parents.
No,
because Sandor lost consciousness before that, right? And then we flash forward.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was in the first issue.
First two, yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it has me interested to see what happened because we got, I don't think it was the last issue, maybe it was two issues ago, when we got all that all those flashback scenes with Jesse's mom. When they get divorced, her parents get divorced, and like I guess she lost her job, and like the bills are piling up, and it's like
she got depressed.
Yeah, she was depressed.
Sandor was there the whole time.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then she keeps ODing in the bathroom, and I guess Sandor gets her out of it every time. Except that one time, right? And I think we did talk about that, because it seemed like the last panel where they showed the bathroom, he's just like, screw this, I'm not helping her anymore.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're ever going to get to see that story, right? Because if now we've got these new bad guys popping in, that's going to cause Jesse and Sandor and crew a lot of grief, I would assume, for at least a couple of issues.
Right.
I wonder if we're going to have time in the story to learn exactly what we missed in that first issue, right? Between the memory loss to the flash forward. And how all that connects to the stuff that we've seen in that flashback scene with Jesse's mom. Jesse's mom does not have it going on.
Does not have it going on.
Ring the bell. That's the episode title.
So, yeah.
So question then, do you think that that's why Sandor is really protective of Jesse, or another reason why he's super protective?
Because he's guilty. He feels guilty.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't think what Mitten says is 100% the story. Sandor might be partially responsible for the death, but I don't know if it was like a purposeful thing.
Right.
Because the way that Mittens made it out, it seemed like Sandor's like, yeah, go fuck yourself. Here's some pills, go die.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let me ask you this, okay? Like, you know the flashback scenes where, you know, what, like, Jesse's mom has got it going on is, you know, like, trying to OD or whatever, and Sandor is, like, saving the day?
Yeah.
Is that pre-wake or post-wake?
Pre-wake.
Pre-wake. Yes. Well,
yeah. So, because here's the point. Sandor could not lassie a like OD load of pills for his owner pre-wake. That's post-wake.
Well,
but he still remembers it though.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think all those flashbacks were pre-wake. I think most of them were. Because when Mittens is talking to Sandor, she's like, "You scored the pills that got Jesse's mom killed."
Oh yeah, yes, good so, point.
Like,
yeah.
So a, like, not, you know, like a beast dog, as far as I know, can't score enough pills to kill a grown woman.
Right.
Like, you know, that's a pretty impressive feat for a dog who can't talk.
True.
Yep.
True. Yep.
Okay, but, okay, beyond that, though, I think it begs the question, you know, do you guys think that Sandor is going to stick around for a while, you know? Because, like, he had the line in this issue that's like, "My guts ain't what they used to be," you know? Like,
well, that's because he's sick, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's purebred, and he's like, his time's running out. So I don't have any issues that equates to when they milk, like, "Oh, I'm an old dog and I got health problems," you know? Like, I don't know if Sandor falls off and Jesse has to go with somebody else.
I mean, ultimately, Jesse's not going to need Sandor, right? Because really, he's staying with her to prep her for all this crap. But now she's got a whole crew with her. That granted, they're not like as protective or maybe powerful as Sandor is. But I mean, she's proven that she's very crafty in this world, right? So she doesn't necessarily need him anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe he's starting to understand that. Now, in terms of the story, how long? I mean, I don't know. I think Marguerite really likes doing this book, right? So as long as it keeps selling and you know, Aftershock keeps letting her do it, she's going to do it. Whether that's 25 or 50 or 100 issues, right? It's like baby teeth, right? Yeah. Donnie's like, as long as they let me do it, I'm just going to keep on fucking doing it.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I mean, I don't know. Like, big character dying, issue 25? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really matters at this point. You know, I think ultimately Sandor is kind of a means to an end. And there's plenty of stories to tell in between. But ultimately, it's just Animosity is about Jesse, not about Sandor.
Right. So when it is Sandor's time, it'll feel more like a brother dying or whatnot than an actual, like, parent or guardian for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just to say that I think that when he does pass on, that by then they will have wrapped in these threads about, like, that part of the story that they're hinting at here, you know?
Maybe. That could be something that she doesn't find out until afterwards.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Maybe it's like a deathbed, you know, like, I have to tell you this. We shall see.
I hope not, dude. I don't want that. There's better ways to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Let's rate this one up. Ronnie, I'll let you go first.
Awesome. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. I'd bet my bygone balls, Tamos. Because I love this book every time.
Nice.
All right, dude. Well, since you opened the door, I'm going to go 4 out of 5. Bumblefuck, Tamos. Since you were such a fan of the chuckle fuck earlier.
Well, you know, the last time we did Tamos, I had somebody say, hey, that's from another podcast. You should do this. And I totally forgot about it until now. So I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5 Double Crunchwrap Supreme Tacos.
Facehugger Supreme?
That's right. Yeah, this book is freaking awesome. And it's great that we're 12 issues in and it's still so freaking good.
And so fresh feeling.
Yeah, great. All right, last book of the night. The final issue of Dark Ark, for now.
Volume 1.
For now, yeah. Volume 1, issue 5. This is written by Cullen Bunn, art by Wando, letters by Ryan Hill, and that's it, because Wando does his own coloring.
Yeah. See, and for the record, this is the only book that I would do creator roll call, because I'd get all the names right.
Oh, man. Travis, do you have a nutshell recap for us?
Yes, I have an insurance nutshell for you. Okay, so the angels have arrived at the Dark Ark by mistake because Noah had prayed for their help on his ark. The police are coming.
Yes, they are.
Ignore that. Shrey says that he only needs their help with good weather, and he manages to get rid of the angel. But they threaten wrath if they are called again on trivial matters. One of the unicorns tries to call back the angels, and Shrey kills him with lightning to keep him quiet. Shrey tells the devil, who reveals that the unicorns did not belong on the ark in the first place. He also tells Shrey he must secretly keep Noah's ark safe so that the monsters have food in the world to come.
Which, I mean, that's kind of been the mission all along, right?
Yeah.
Not really.
No?
No. I mean, he wasn't responsible for Noah's Ark before this moment, before he got mistaken for Noah's. Which begs the question, what's going on with Noah's Ark?
I thought
their mission was to make sure that Noah's Ark reached the Promised Land.
See, I thought that as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because yeah. I think it was specified pretty early on that was part of the mission. That's why he's got this Ark for the monsters.
Yeah.
And the only way for them to eat after it's all over is for Noah's Ark to survive. So all the other stuff is there for them to eat.
Right.
So
it begs the question, though, what's the problem on Noah's Ark besides there being a flood of whatever biblical proportions?
Well, I'm going to tell you what's wrong. Obviously, it stinks over there. They've been floating on this ocean for 40 days and 40 nights. There's cow crap everywhere, pig crap everywhere. Birds are pooping all over the place. I'd be having problems too. That's probably why he prayed to God. He's like, please just send me a couple toilets over here, maybe some bidets.
Oh no.
Now he's probably like, please make it be over, right? Like, it's over. I did it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but, I mean, all right, so it's been... If
they didn't show up, that's not going to happen.
It's been a long time since I've read the Noah story. But if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty simple, and they're just running out of food.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think they go, like, the last week without food or water.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. See, Shrey doesn't have that problem, because the only people he needs to feed are him and his family, right? He's not feeding the prisoners... And
he's feeding the prisoners to the dark animals.
Yeah,
right?
And the prisoners are food for the demons and whatever crap is ill.
Yeah.
You don't think he's feeding the prisoners at all?
I don't think so.
Like, they would die eventually, you know?
I mean, you can go like a month or two with that food, dude.
Yeah, begs the question, I guess, how long this flood has been going on.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to die essentially anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that comes up in the issue, right? Because when the angels show up and they figure out that there's angels on the ark, one of them's like, hey, like, we should start yelling so the angels come rescue us. And one of the prisoners is like, there's no point. Like, if God wanted to save us, he would have put us in Noah's ark.
Right.
Right? Like, exactly. God didn't want to save us, so they don't give a shit. They're going to leave us in here.
Yeah. Okay, dude, since you mentioned it, like... I was kind of interested by Callie this issue, right? Like, that was her that said that, right? Or Callie was the one who was like, hey, the reason we're still alive is because Shrey brought us on board, you know?
Right.
Like, she's like full Stockholm Syndrome. Like, maybe I'll get bitten by a vampire and escape,
stay alive. That's not Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh, that's not Stockholm Syndrome?
No, dude, she's being a realist.
Yeah.
I mean...
She's like, I get... stay alive to be eaten by monsters.
Pretty much.
Well, dude, because fucking Cruel is like, oh, I'm going to protect anytime somebody comes for Callie. Like Shrey is going to show, or Cruel is going to show up and be like, I'm killing you.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's going to outlive everybody.
Well, maybe.
She's going to have some Cruel babies.
Cruel already has a baby, so why not?
Yeah. All right, so I want to talk about... go ahead, Ronnie.
No, I think you're going the same place I was going.
I want to go to the angels.
Okay.
Is that where you're going?
Yep.
Okay,
that's exactly where I was going.
All right, good. So these angels, I'm just going to say it.
They're assholes.
All right, Ronnie read my mind. Now, I'm not going to get struck by lightning. Ronnie will. So thanks, Ronnie.
I didn't say real ones are. I'm saying these are portrayed in the book.
Good save. These guys are assholes, man. And... I don't know, man. It has me thinking about like the whole thing, right? With like with God and the devil, and them having their own arcs, because these angels are working for God, right? Mm-hmm. And God's supposed to be, you know, all good, right? All knowing, mm-hmm. omnipotent, like whatever. And the devil is just all bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, these guys don't give a shit about the ark one way or the other, right? Because first of all, they think they're visiting Noah's Ark, which I don't want to talk about yet. Let's skip that for now. So they think they're visiting Noah's Ark. The way that they talk to Shrey, I would maybe understand if they knew that it was Shrey, right? But they think it's Noah. And if Noah is on a holy mission from God, whom they work for, shouldn't they treat him a little nicer, right? But they don't.
You would think.
They're like, why the hell did you call us here?
Yeah. Hurry up and tell us what you want so we can get the hell out of here.
Yeah, so we can get out of here. And one of them's like, we don't even care about this mission. Like, we don't care if you die. But, like, hurry the hell up.
Yeah, the shit's beneath them, dude. Like, you know what an insult it is? They have to come down to Earth? I think that's what I'm getting from this whole thing. And especially when they're like, oh, like, take care of the beasts? No. Never know. That's humans' jobs. That's not angels' shit.
Right.
You know? I mean, like, I feel like it's at some point I compared it to Spawn in the way that it flips the, like, you know, heaven hell dynamic.
Yeah, right.
Maybe hell is the evil one, or like the good one, and heaven is the bad one. You know, it's all perspective or whatever. Maybe that's a little bit of this in the series too.
I think that'd be interesting. Ronnie, do you have any other thoughts on that before we go to tall arc thing?
I didn't think it was more like that. I just think it was more like there's assholes everywhere on both sides type of thing. But
I don't know, yes, man. The devil seemed pretty nice.
Did he, though?
I mean, aside from the fact that he looks very tonic.
Well, yeah, because he actually had a civil conversation.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, beyond that, though, like...
Which begs to the question, though, as to you have to be nice to him because he, whatever terrible thing that he did, now he's doing your bidding, and you, for your existence to still survive, he has to get from point A to point B.
I guess.
So you don't want to be, like, a total asshole and, like, obliterate him right there.
Well, I'm curious if he could obliterate
him. That's true.
That goes both ways, right? Like with God as well. Because he doesn't show up, right? He's not talking directly to Noah. He's sending these angels down, and they go to the wrong ark. Like, I don't understand how they can go to the wrong ark if they're on a mission directly from God.
Siri GPS. They took the wrong exit.
See, that's why I don't use iPhones.
Yep. Alexa.
See, she knows.
Drumroll.
I cut you off, Travis. What were you going to say?
Oh, I mean, man, so much. Among other things, as far as the, like, which is good, which is evil, devil's not, like, advocating for mass extinction or genocide, you know, which seems to be, like, the God's solution in this story. Yeah, what else are we talking about? We're talking about, mistaking the ark and whatnot. They're disinterested, you know? Like they don't want to be on this mission, I guess. You know, like, among other things, like, if you buy into the classic narrative, humans, like angels are jealous of humans because humans have God's love and angels are, like, slaves to God, right? So, you know, you call them down on a mission to protect humans and the beasts of Earth. They're like, who cares? You know, like, you know, yeah. I'm not invested in this except to the extent that I'm being ordered to do it.
So they just go to the first arc they see? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because yeah, they don't want to be there in the first place. So it's like, oh, well, yep, there's the arc. Let's go.
Yeah, maybe there's like a Goldilocks arc that's like not good and not evil, but like it's like a gray arc.
That's right.
You're welcome, Aftershock. Call me. Gray arc.
Okay, I mean, I guess. I don't know the answer. Obviously, you know, we're not going to find out now. Maybe some of that will be answered when the next arc starts. The next arc of Dark Arc.
Hashtag dad jokes.
Oh, man. Yeah. I guess. I don't know. It seemed a little weird.
I have a kind of a significant question that I want to run by you guys, which is the unicorns, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the most interesting part of the whole issue is, like, A, what I took is that, like, it's almost like Shrey inherited an arc full of monsters and is like, this, you're on this now. I got it ready. You're on it. But beyond that, the unicorn snuck on there, and they're not supposed to be. So how do they get there, and why are they there?
The gray arc put them there as moles.
Moles.
Now, that's a good question, because obviously, because if you think about it, like, if Noah or God put them, well, I guess because the angels didn't even know that they were there, right?
Right.
Nope.
Because I was gonna say. Because I was gonna say.
This is what I'm saying, dude. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's there for a reason, dude. I don't know,
dude. As powerful as these angels are, you're telling me they don't know that there's a bunch of monsters on this ark? Like, forget. Like, okay, maybe they did go to the wrong ark, but when they get there, they can't sense like all the evil on this ark.
Yeah, true.
Maybe they've never been to Earth.
Nah, dude. No.
There's some dumb angels then.
No, they're dumb. Does anybody see them? And here's the thing. Like, nobody sees them except Shrey, right?
Right.
So, what if Noah and Shrey are both just effing crazy, right?
Well, what if Shrey's the one that conjured them up so that way to save face in front of the monsters?
That's possible.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's possible.
Because I mean, you know, hours before, they were all going to mutiny. So then, you know, the angels show up. his mind tricks or projections or whatever. Or maybe one of his kids' projections, because we don't even know if they have powers or not.
Yeah, and I don't think they've said anything about the kids having powers, but I do like that idea more. It just seems, A, too convenient, and B, too weird to be so convenient.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And right. Nobody sees the angels. The unicorns are the closest, but even like as soon as they get there, the angels are gone. And I mean, Shrey obliterates.
Yeah,
he just burns the unicorns to a crisp, and that's why we no longer have unicorns.
It's just one unicorn, right?
It's both.
No, it was both.
Oh, it's both.
Yeah, it was both.
Oh, my bad.
He obliterates them before they can call for the angel. But I mean, that could be again just for show, right? Like, don't come up here. You're supposed to be down at the bottom of the
ark. Well, I think that's what I think the most example of them is.
Yeah.
Or that's the exclamation point at the end of the sentence is you obliterated or he obliterated a species basically and wiped them out. And so look, keep your asses in check around there.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, but they don't belong on the Dark Ark. Assumedly, they don't belong on the regular Ark because they're not on there.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, it suggests that there's something. I don't know. It seems a bit strange, but I assume that it's there for a reason.
Yeah. I agree that there's somebody else in play besides the two main God and the devil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, which to me, I wonder if it's whoever's in control of Under the Sea.
King Triton?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, I mean, in all other mythological or whatever, there's multiple gods and good and evil. But, you know, in the Bible, there's only two. So could this be the extra spin on it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's very interesting that there's a potential third player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe they get wiped out, and that's why we only have two still.
Yeah, it got me thinking when we were talking about maybe God isn't the good one and maybe the devil isn't the bad one. I don't know if you guys are like familiar with like Gnostic Christianity. It's not around anymore. They all got killed by other Christians, but they had a similar idea where like the God that created the world wasn't a good God. He was like extremely jealous, and like there was another God above this God, and there were like all these like sub gods underneath it. So he's kind of like a sub god of this like all seeing, all knowing, like intangible that like people never talk to, right? Because it's just like an ether thing,
right?
And it was really interesting to think about that. Because obviously Cullen Bunn likes to play around with a lot of these stories, right? Like we saw it in what's the one that just ended?
Unholy Grail.
Unholy Grail. He's doing it with this one. He's got the Brothers Rule coming out.
But the same thing is he's got the toys and he can do whatever. And some of the toys you don't have to put back in the box because like the unicorns, like they don't exist. So.
Sure.
They don't go back in the box.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, the third one could be the Antichrist, right?
Sure. I don't know. This would be a little too early for that, right? Because you'd have to have a Christ before you have an Antichrist.
But I thought the Antichrist came more than once.
I don't know.
I don't either. But maybe not. Maybe that's... I don't know. Anyways,
all right,
let's wrap this one up.
Then. Let's wrap this one up. I guess I'll go first on this one. I'll give it a 4 out of 5 Doritos Blaze Taco.
I'll go, let's see, I'll give it a 4 out of 5. I'm sorry you left me no choice, Tamos.
And I will go 4.5 out of 5 crispy unicorn Tamos.
Oh, damn, that would be a good episode title. Crispy Unicorn Taco.
Yes.
Taco Tamos.
All right. Well, we are now all caught up. Yes.
I have some late breaking news, by the way, that I just want to throw out there.
Do tell.
Because I just read Ghost Fleet last night.
Have you read Ghost Fleet?
I have read Ghost Fleet, bro. And I just want to say that I think it's possible that Ghost Fleet crosses over with Baby Teeth. So fans of Baby Teeth, maybe you should check out Ghost Fleet. Let's just say the silhouette makes an appearance.
Yep.
The silhouette, maybe not the silhouette. You know, you can be the judge. So yeah, that's all.
I like it. I'm glad you read like, Ghost Fleet.
That's like saying that the Janice in this story is the Janice from Shipwrecked.
It could be.
But it's written by Donny Cates.
True.
There's Black Eyed Kids and Baby Teeth. That's not Donny Cates.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a multiple series crossover, you know?
Yeah.
So, maybe the silhouette is like, they get the Antichrist and they put it in the Indiana Jones, like, fort full of boxes thing. You know, that's where the Ghost Fleet goes at the end of the day. They just suck at their job.
Oh, Ghost Fleet.
But there is Southern Bastards in Redneck. Did you know that?
I haven't read Redneck.
Oh,
yet.
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't read it. I don't read Southern Bastards, so.
I know.
But Southern Bastards
is pretty great. Southern Bastards is outside Martin's door, so he doesn't. All he has to do is go outside and sit on the porch swing.
Southern Bastards is like literally South Carolina, so.
Yeah, strikes a nerve.
Yeah. I'm not quite like in the country, but if you go to the country, the backwoods, the South Kakalaki, then yeah. Which, I mean, they're local, aren't they? Where are they from? They're from Georgia.
What?
Who does that? Jason Aaron. And Latour,
yeah.
Right?
He's from Alabama.
Alabama.
Jason Aaron's from Alabama, but he lives in Kansas City now.
Yeah, gotcha. Oh, see? There's another redneck capital.
Well, hello. I mean, I'm right here.
That's why I said it, buddy. All right. Let's see. So I'm sure these are subject to change, but this is the schedule that I have come up with for the rest of the month for Aftershock. So coming out Valentine's Day, February 14th, I've got Baby Teeth number 8, Animosity Evolution number 4, and Cold War number 1. On the 21st, I've got Alters number 10, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is the last issue. Brilliant Trash number 4. And then on the 28th, I've got Backways number 3, Rough Riders Ride or Die number 1, and Fujitsu number 5. Of course, all these dates are subject to change because, I'll be honest, sometimes I don't know what's coming out till the day before.
That is correct.
So, that's going to be it. We're going to wrap it up. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We want your feedback. Get in touch with us on Twitter. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And of course, you can find tons of other podcasts at nerdlegion.com. We'll be back maybe next week, the week after. Bye-bye.